Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, discussing how the Vedas describe the absolute truth directly, literally, not just by some indirect figurative reference. Tasmat tasmims ta shakshad rupataya muktiya vritya kena prakarena charanti tam prakaram visheshata pripayati svayam upadisha iti. Therefore your good self should kindly explain exactly how the Vedas refer to Brahman by their direct, literal meaning. Okay? You can take the question as not a doubt that the Vedas can't describe the absolute truth, but Parikshit wants to hear it directly from Shukadev. Parikshit wants to hear it from Shukadev, and he wants to hear how the Vedas manage to directly describe the absolute truth. Anyata padartatva yogad apadartasya chavakyartatya yogad na shruti gocharatvam brahmanapsyad iti stute putastaram tad uparichara spurtir bhagavatas tad gocharatvam. Otherwise, Brahman could not be an entity designated by words. And since what is not designated by words cannot be described in verbal statements, Brahman could not be accessible through the Shrutis. Putastaram, and even more, Bhagavan, who appears as a superimposition on Brahman, could not be accessible. That's from the Mayavadi point of view. Tatkatam eva svabhaktayo ityadya svatapramana bhutana vedana marga bhagavat paratvam adishyet yuktam iti. And even how then in the statement beginning to his devotees could it have been said that he instructed them about the path of the self-evidently authoritative Vedas, saying that the Vedas aim at the personality of Godhead? Okay. There's a statement here. Where does it come from?
This is the Bhagavatam, 86th chapter, last verse.
Well, 86th chapter, okay, because it's just before this beginning of the prayers of personified Veda, at the end of the chapter just before. It says that Krishna spoke some instructions to two of his devotees. Yeah, to his two dear devotees in Mithila. Krishna gave him personal instructions. Well, so actually you can take this question as connected with that last pastime. How can the Supreme Lord be describing himself to devotees when the absolute truth can't be described in words? So tak pramanya siddhaye mukya vakyanam tu sakshan charanam avashyam vaktavyam. In order to affirm that the Vedas are in fact self-evident, it will have to be said that their principal statements refer literally to the Supreme Lord. Lakshana dao praman antara mulatvat. Because the indirect modes of reference like lakshana are dependent on other means of knowing. You see, this is the problem. Lakshana vritti may be a resort, when the literal meaning is not appropriate. But Lakshanavritti depends on sensory evidence and on logic. And the absolute truth can only be known by the Vedas, not by sensory perception and logic. So if the Vedas are teaching us the absolute truth in an indirect way that requires using sensory perception and logic, it won't work. Those means are not effective for knowing the absolute truth. That's why, if the Vedas describe the absolute truth, they have to do it directly. They can't do it indirectly. Because indirect means requires extrinsic means of knowing, which are ineffective for knowing the absolute truth. Tato yatra lakshanadikam api na sambhavati, tatra katantaram sakshacharanam iti bhava. So Parikshit's thinking, how can there be literal reference to what even figurative uses and so on cannot describe? Okay, commentary. Parikshit does not expect a negative answer to his inquiry. He is already convinced that Vedas can describe Brahma and wants to know how they manage to do this. When living beings with human intelligence and the capacity of human language perceive something, it proceeds to become a padartha. So padartha we can translate as thing, but literally padartha means padartha, the meaning of a word. So padarthas are things that we can give names to or assign words to. If Brahman cannot be described in words, then it cannot be a padartha, an identifiable entity. It may exist, but we can't identify it. Which for all practical purposes is just as bad as its being nothing. Even if mystics are supposed to have some ineffable access to this padartha, this apadartha, this something that's not a padartha, the Vedas, which are words, will have no power to reveal it. Okay, maybe there's some self-realized souls who have realized Brahman. That's okay for them, but still the Vedas won't be able to do anything to help anybody else understand the absolute truth. According to the Advaitavada impersonalists, the only reality is formless Brahman. All forms, including that of the Supreme Lord, are illusions superimposed on the reality. If this is true, how can the Vedas say anything about the personality of Godhead? He is nothing but an illusion, covering Brahman, unlike the other illusions. Okay, he's an illusion, like other material objects, the Supreme Lord. But unlike the other illusions, he is not a product of the modes of nature. Narayana paro vyaktat, Lord Narayana transcends the unmanifested material nature. And words only describe the products of the modes. Okay, Narayana is an illusion. The Vedas can describe illusions, but only those illusions that can be named. Only those illusions that are products of the material modes. He's an illusion, but he's not a product of the material modes. So there's nothing you can say about Bhagawan either. Likely still, on King Parikshit's mind, is the last verse spoken by Shukadeva in the previous chapter, very last verse, about Sri Krishna's visit to his devotees Baholashva and Shrutadeva in the city Mithila, where it was said, Evam Svabhaktayo Rajan Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktiman Ushit Vadishya Sanmargam Punar Dwaravati Magat. O King, thus the personality of Godhead, who is devoted to his own devotees, stayed for some time with his two great devotees, Shrutadeva and Bahulashva, teaching them the behavior of perfect saints. Then the Lord returned to Dwarka. Krishna came to these two devotees of his as a friend, not a teacher of philosophy. Thus, as far as Bhagavatam records, he accepted the service of Baholashva, the king of Mithila, without saying anything. And to the simple Brahmana, Shrutadev, he only spoke about the importance of honoring and worshipping Brahmins. But he taught them both the essence of the Vedas' teachings by what he did. They worshiped the Supreme Truth with complete sincerity for the perfection of their lives. And he appeared to them in the form of Krishna as the reward of that worship. The Mayavada impersonalists deny that the Vedas directly describe the Absolute Truth, because in their opinion, Brahman is beyond the scope of words and thought. They are, however, obliged to propose that by lakshanavritti, figurative usage, the Vedas orient their readers' attention in a general direction of Brahman. Otherwise, if even Lakshana fails to describe it, the Vedas would be no use for seekers of the Absolute. They would not be able to access Brahman even indirectly. Maharaj's prediction is not a Mayavadi. He is convinced of the self-evident authority of the Vedas, which to him means that what they say about the Supreme can be understood directly in its literal sense. One second, please. Any comments? Yes.
This translation, the first sentence and other quotation sentences also, is it
first sentence? The first sentence of the translation?
Yeah.
Yes.
The quotation mark. Is it Jiva Goswami is paraphrasing the question of Parikshit Maharaj?
Well, yes. This is a comment on the question. The word Sakshat Charanti are quoted here. Yes, this is standard commentary style of paraphrasing.
Okay. So it's like what Parikshit Maharaj is asking.
It is, yes.
So the first statement is it's not Mayavadi assumption of Parikshit Maharaj.
Well, not necessarily, but it really seems like Parikshit Maharaj is taking the Mayavad point of view to ask this question. Because the Vaishnavs wouldn't even ask the question. They wouldn't have the doubt.
And about the Narayana Puravikta commentary, is it the Mayavadi say that the superimposition, the reality is not under the modes of material nature?
Yes, because only the Mayavadis say that Bhagavan is an illusion. That Bhagavan is an illusion superposed on the Absolute Truth. The Vaishnavas say that Bhagavan is the Absolute Truth, the original. So we're talking from the Mayavada point of view. I think I point that out.
Yeah, you said that.
In the second paragraph of the commentary, according to the Advaita Vada personalist.
Yeah, so the point made is that even if you consider Narayana as a product of illusion, he is not within the modes of material nature.
He's a different kind of illusion, yes.
According to Mayavada.
Well, the Mayavadis say that he's beyond the influence of Pradhan. Mm-hmm. So he can't be a product of the material world because Pradhan doesn't affect him. Material nature doesn't affect him.
The illusion is for us that Brahman is not within the world.
Brahman is not a material product. Not a product of Prakriti. Bhagavan is not, yes, Bhagavan. Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with logic. You see, because even more Bhagavan, more personal in the superimposition of Brahman. So it looks like that Brahman, according to them, must be superior. But then we say even more Bhagavan. Looks like that then they imply that Bhagavan is even superior to the Brahman.
No, that just means even more.
Which means it's more difficult to understand him.
No, the predicate of the previous sentence is Brahman cannot be accessible. And even more, Bhagavan cannot be accessible. You have to see the predicate that's being modified here.
But why?
It doesn't mean even more Bhagavan doesn't mean Bhagavan is even more. The verb is not is. The implied verb is cannot be accessed. It's not accessible.
But I wanted to say that usually the Brahman is completely impossible to understand because it's the authentic qualities. And then we say about Bhagavan, which is something which qualities, which is supposed to be easier to understand. But here we have that even more Bhagavan is still more difficult to understand.
I know, but Jiva Goswami uses the word kutastanam. Kutastanam, even more. I'm just translating what he said. For the reason that's given in the sentence following that.
Also, and also.
No, but the word is kutastaram. What even more so? Taram. Taram is a suffix expressing comparison.
In that case, also, we can say that what to speak of Brahman, even Bhagavan, which is, according to Mayavadis, is less important than Brahman. Even God, he also cannot be seen by.
I guess so, yes. Yes.
So it means that not only Brahman, which is completely impossible, but even Bhagavan, which is easier to be accessible, even Bhagavan is impossible to describe because it beyond the most special. And they can speak with words which are in the scope of what the nation.
Okay. Yes, okay. Okay, I'm moving on. Atra Sri Shukadev Vena Dattam Uttaram Aha. Sri Shukadev speaks his answer to this. Vishiru Vacha Udindriyamana prana jananam asvijat prabhu matrartam jabavartam cha atmane kalpanaya cha. Here's Shukadev's answer. The sage said, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they can indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. That's the beginning of his answer. Jiva Goswami comments. Budyadin upadin jananam anushayinam jivanam matradhyartam prabhuvu padameshwaro asvijat. Natu jana swavidyaya svijan iti vivarta vadaha parivitaha. This means that the Lord, the Supreme Controller, created the imaginary features of intelligence and so on to help the living beings, the finite souls who had been resting within him, in their engagements of what are called mantra and so on. be obtained. Okay. It is not said that the living beings created this world by their own ignorance. But so the theory of illusionism is denied. The Lord created the world for the living entities. The living entities didn't create their own illusion. He created it. Miyante iti matra vishayas tadartam bhavartam bhavo janma lakshanam karma tatragriti karma karanartam iti artaha. This means, he created intelligence and so on for the sake of the objects of enjoyment, which are called matras, because miyamte, they are measured. He created it for existence. He created these things for existence, bhava artam. That means the activity symbolized as birth. That is to say, for the sake of the performance of work beginning from birth. And then atmane, lokantara gamane, atmanas tantam loka bhog ayet yartaha. He created the senses and so on, also for atma, for oneself. That means for going to other worlds, or in other words, for one's enjoyment of such other worlds. And akalpanaya, kalpana nivritaye, muktaye iti artaha. And finally, he created them for non-productivity, that is, the stoppage of production, or in other words, liberation. Four terms, arta dharma kama moksha artam iti kramena padatatushtyasi artaha. These four terms indicate one after another economic development, religiosity, sense gratification, and liberation. In other words, the Supreme Lord created this world. He created senses, intelligent senses, mind, and vital air for living entities for these four purposes. For sense gratification, for elevation to higher planets, for birth and activities, for elevation to other worlds, and for liberation, which correspond to dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Okay. Commentary. Countless jivas expand from the Supreme Lord eternally, like the countless rays of the sun. Thus the jivas have no beginning or end. Some may presume that they came into being from nothing at the beginning of creation, but that presumption is wrong and contradicts the Vedic version. According to the Upanishads and Puranas, material creation is a repeated cycle. Before the beginning, the so-called beginning, the jivas were sleeping in wait for their so-called creation, having entered the body of Mahavishnu when the previous creation was dissolved. Illusionism, or Vivartavad, as it is called by the followers of Shankaracharya, is an attempt to explain away the duality of common experience as totally unreal. Nothing more than a living force's own delusion. The Vedic scriptures, however, do not follow this illusionist line. They describe rather a separate creator, the all-powerful supreme controller, Prabhu. This creator is not himself illusory, nor is he fallible. Omnipotent and omniscient, he creates from his real energies, and what his energies create is also real. Matra means measurement. And in the technical context of Vedanta philosophy, it means the conditioned soul's exploitation of material objects for sense gratification. Among the elements of creation, the tantmatras are the subtle forms of sense objects, which precede their gross counterparts in the sequence of evolution. For example, the subtle form of auditory experience appears first, and then from it the element akasha, or ethereal sky, which is the medium of sound. To to accommodate the individual desires of all the souls entering material life. When the Supreme Lord created the universe, he made arrangements for them to be able to enjoy all varieties of objects. Material activity begins from birth. The jivas are in fact never born, but before they undergo the apparent phenomena of birth, they are dormant and inactive, and after they die, they again cease to act. Each soul lives together with others for some time, but in the end, he has to leave for his next life alone. His own mentality, rather than anything else, determines where he will go next. The whole grand show of creation, with all its complications of pleasure and suffering, is just a mental product of its participants. God and his energies provide the raw ingredients, but what the jivas make of them is their own doing. So the jivas are making up their own illusion, but not making up out of nothing. God provides those raw ingredients. Material life is imaginary, not because it has no existence, no real existence, but because it is never exactly what those who live it think it to be. Therefore, it is called kalpana, mental concoction. In contrast, the higher reality reached in liberation is akalpana. Akalpana, not created and not imaginary. Okay, any questions, comments? Yes.
In the commentary, in translation, in the engagements of mantra and so on. So, when it was written, when I saw this word mantra, it missed the word mantra. Then, Shri Yogasana explains what is called mantra because it's miyate and so on. So, shall we leave it as this or shall we give some role?
I don't understand, what's the problem?
Question arose to me when I wrote this, derivations of mantra, just work without translation, Sanskrit word. So then, he explains later on about it.
He doesn't explain it until he gets to that sentence, so I don't try to add an explanation, because he doesn't give one. In the next sentence, he defines a mantra. I can't put the purport inside the translation, so I just leave it as mantra in the first sentence. What do you suggest, Tony? What is it? You know, you say you have to wait till the next sentence, because he doesn't choose to explain it until then. If I give the English translation from our BBT translation, that's sort of, it's giving it away. Jiva Goswami didn't give us an explanation.
Also, Atmanaha, this word, Shoji explains Tatma, Loka, Bhoga, and Sattva, okay, so what they going to do the words or even the word once German message for the words. So Akunaha surely explained that this is for Jivas enjoyment or for Krishna's enjoyment. Or going to the same word. Because Akunaha can be both.
Well, the context of the whole thing is, the Lord created, what did he create? He created the function, the faculties of the living entities so that they could indulge. So, looking at the context of the verse, it's all for the jivas. You know, it's already, that's the framework in which we establish. Jiva Goswami doesn't say it again for the jivas, it just says, it's just a relative pronoun, Atmane. Again, I would have to add something that Jiva Goswami didn't say. It's there in the original verse. It's there, clear that we're talking about the jiva. It's not that the Lord's creating it for himself. Okay. I mean, I could say something more in the commentary if it was really a... what do you say? Well, in the commentary, I do say living enemies and living enemies that. I make it explicit in the commentary. Okay, anyway, I can't be adding things to the translation. You know, right there.
Matra is a long R, matra.
Tanmatra, I mean, matra is a neuter noun, it's matra. Matra here is only because it's plural. Vishayas is Pratame Vibhakti Bahuvachana. But the Ekavachana is short R, it's neuter. All right, we try another paragraph? Actually, this the next paragraph is the last paragraph of the Samuchid, fifth paragraph. Moshopi atra chitmatra taya vastiti rupaha. In this context, moreover, the liberation can be understood as having two forms. Liberation we understood as having two forms. Chinmatra taya avastita rupaha yata varna vidanam apavargas chabhavati. Two different forms of liberation. One is the liberation of becoming situated as pure spirit. The other is identified with the gradual manifestation of the goal of pure devotion. According to the definition of the word, okay, the format got messed up here. I didn't understand, this is a quotation. Ananya nimitta bhakti yoga lakshano ityantena, let me read the whole sentence. Yata varna vidana, this is a quotation from the fifth canto, prose. Yata varna vidana bhavargas cha bhavati yosal bhagavati ityadina. And then it says again, ananya nimitta bhakti yoga lakshano nana gati nimitta vidya granti randana dvarena ityantena panchama opta gadiena. Tata niyuktatvat sadhya bhakti pradyo bhava lakshanas cheti dvividokyaya. Okay, that's the whole sentence. I sort it out and chop it into smaller pieces in the translation. In this context, moreover, liberation can be described as having two forms, dvivido. One is the liberation of becoming situated as pure spirit. The other is identified with the gradual manifestation of pure devotion. According to the definition of the word liberation explained in the prose passage spoken in the fifth canto, which begins, and following the rules for one's own occupational order, one also achieves liberation. What is liberation? This is in connection with the personality of Godhead. And later on in the passage, or the passage ends by saying, this is characterized by devotional service for the Lord without any other motives, which acts by severing the knots of ignorance, which will lead to the obtaining of various future births. In both forms of these forms of liberation, ubayatrapi kalpana rupa vidyaya divritte. In both of these forms of liberation, the ignorance of material productivity is stopped. Okay, the first verse spoken in answer by Shukadev says the Lord created the senses, mind, intelligence, so on, for the four purposes. The last purpose is akalpana. That we understand is liberation. Jiva Goswami is explaining it's two different kinds of liberation. One is just impersonal, realizing your spirit soul. The second kind of liberation is pure devotional service. Both of them are called, can be known by the term akalpana. Because the fifth canto describes devotional service as a form of liberation. or describes liberation in terms of devotional service. Okay, commentary. In the fifth canto, 19th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Shukadeva tells King Parikshit about life in Bharatvarsha, the centermost region of the universe. Shukadeva says, Asmin eva varshe purushaya labdha janmabhi shukla rohita krishna varnena swarabdena karmana divya manusha naraka katayo bahvya atmana anupurvyena sarva yeva sarvesham vidyate yatavarna vidana mabhavargastra bhavati. Okay, that all says, people who take birth in this particular region, Bharatvarsha, earn all kinds of future lives, heavenly, human, and hellish, by the various destinations they create for themselves by working in the white, red, and black modes of nature. Here, according to the modes they follow, each person experiences all the varieties of destinies in the course of their lives. And here, liberation is also available. Shukadeva leaves no room for misinterpreting what he means by liberation, because he goes on to say, Yo sau apavarga, what does it mean? Yo sau bhagavati sarvabhutatma jnanatmye nirukte nilayane paramatmani vasudeve nanya nimitta bhakti yoga lakshano nana gati nimitta vidya granti radhana dvarena yadahi maha purusha purusha prasankaha. This cessation of material existence is defined as devotional service with no selfish motives for the Supreme Lord, the soul of all created beings, who is not ruled by any higher soul, who is ineffable, that means can't understand, and who has no other shelter. He is the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. His devotional service is achieved when one has cut through the knots of illusion that has caused one's various births. And that severing of the knot of illusion is possible when one has obtained the association of the Supreme Lord's devotees. That's devotional liberation, authorized by Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto. I made the wrong judgment. This is not at all the end of the Arache. The Arache goes on and on. It's a huge Arache. I think it's 39 paragraphs. Two more files. Okay. Any comments on this? Yes. John, I got a question.
Centermost of the universe, and Bhakti is mentioning the Bharatvarsha is the topmost in the universe. In that, West Bengal is topmost, in that Mayapur, Navadvip, like that.
Yes.
And some have a different understanding.
Why is that different? The center, physically the center of the universe, in importance, is the most important place. It doesn't mean it's on the top physically. You say it's the most important place. Because most of the Lord's incarnations appear in Bharatvarsha, not all, but most of them appear in Bharatvarsha. And, you know, the Lord's topmost abodes, they appear in the material world, in Bharatvarsha. That's what makes it important, more than anything else, is that's where Vrindavan is. That's where Mayapur is. Okay? All right, we'll try the next paragraph. All right, 97.6. Etaruktam bhavati. Yasmat swayam ishvaras. Tat tat artam tat tat sadhaka tvena drishyamananam jivanam bhujyadin shrishtavan tasmat tat tat sampadana shakti vidana yogyatam Teishu kritavani, he loved you, Te.
Okay, the Lord created the living entities, he created them, their intelligence, their senses, and so on, for these purposes. That implies something. The idea being expressed is that because the Supreme Lord personally created the intelligence and so on of the finite souls, whom he saw as candidates for performing the various disciplines for achieving each of these goals, he created this apparatus, these facilities, for achieving these goals. And that means that he assumed, the Lord was thinking, that the living entities are candidates, they can achieve these goals. It can therefore be inferred that by imparting appropriate potencies to these faculties of intelligence and so on, the Lord gave them the competence for achieving all these goals. In other words, what the Lord is doing is empowering the living entities to achieve their goals by giving them the facilities. You can think of it in a positive way like that. He didn't just create the world to make everybody suffer. He created this world to let the living entities do what they want to do, to facilitate them. Tatra trivarga sampadika shaktayaha kalpanatmaka maya vidya vidya shaktir amshaha. Among these are the so-called productive potencies for accomplishing the three purposes of life, which potencies are partial expansions of Maya's functional potency of ignorance. Bahir Mukha Karmatmaka Twat Sarup Anyata Bhava Samsaritva Hetu Twat Cha. This is so. These potencies for accomplishing Dharma Artha Kama are partial expansions of Maya's functional potency of ignorance. And that is so because these functions pertain to materialistic activity and because they are the causes of material existence in which one conceives of oneself as other than what one actually is. So the potencies that cause material activity and let one be an illusion, those are functions of ignorance. They're exerted by the power of ignorance in Maya. Apara moksha sampat, but the fourth goal, the potencies that help one achieve the fourth goal. Apara moksha sampadika shaktir akalpana rupa chit shaktir evamshaha. Though the other potencies, those which accomplish liberation, are not productive, they are partial expansions of the spiritual energy. Why? Antar mukha jnana bhakti rupa twat swarup anyata bhava samsarita cheda hetu twat cha. Because these energies that help one achieve liberation or empower one to achieve liberation are expansions of the spiritual energy. Because they take the forms of inner spiritual practices of jnana and bhakti, and because they are causes of cutting short this material existence, of thinking oneself other than one actually is. Oh boy, okay, commentary. Shukadev listed four goals of life in the material world: sense gratification, productive work, elevation to higher status in the next life, and disentanglement from illusion. In order that the living beings coming into material existence could fulfill all these purposes, the all-powerful Creator bestowed various powers of His in the living beings' conscious faculties. Among the potencies He gave them was that of realizing the ultimate perfection of life, Himself. This final goal of liberation is realized in two different ways, with two different means of being achieved, namely the cultivation of knowledge and the practice of devotional service. Both are available according to the candidate's choice. Despite the difference of their methods and results, both of these methods free the soul of his misidentification with matter. Muktir ityat yatarupem rupam swarupena vyavastitihi.
Liberation means to give up all other identities and be reinstated as one's true self. Bhagavatam 2:10-7. You have a question?
Two different ways. Means namely the cultivation of knowledge and the practice of devotional service.
Yes.
And mukti itva anyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. So this cultivation of knowledge, that also reinstates one in one's own true self.
Only partially. By knowledge you can get liberation from material identity, but then you just have a generic impersonal understanding. That's only partial liberation. But you can go step by step. You can first of all realize your spirit soul, and then realize you're Krishna's servant. It's working toward the final goal, but only halfway. It's also called liberation, but it's like halfway liberation.
When I read this commentary, I also thought the same question. Not in the understanding, but in the context, because the commentary is explaining this, giving more explanation on this two liberation, and the last statement is you are ending with Muktir Eva Anyata Rupam. So this is like a general meaning of liberation, which could also be identified with the impersonal liberation.
So, yes.
So I have this.
What do you suggest we do to clarify it?
I thought that this Muktir Eva is only refers to the liberation achieved by devotion service, not the other liberation. But yet there is the specific mention is not given. Even though he has mentioned
but back at the previous paragraph, the 97.5 was discussing how liberation could take two forms.
You mentioned in the same commentary, last third line, despite the difference of their methods and results. But still, the Muktir Eva Anyata Rupam looks like can go to either of them or both of them. It's not specifically mentioned.
Okay.
I don't know, I may be wrong, but I just came up with this.
I'm looking for how I can fix this. Okay, I'm going to make a comment here to fix this. The definition is given in the fifth canto. It's definitely devotional.
Yeah.
But Jiva Goswami is saying what Jiva Goswami is being more liberal about it.
Yeah.
He's saying that a kalpana can also refer to impersonal liberation. He's not denying impersonal liberation. He's accepting it as a halfway point. It's a step in liberation. So he's saying, I don't want to disagree with him, that that impersonal form of liberation can also be called liberation. But we can clarify it and explain that it's not final liberation. It's all, there's a distinction. They're not equal. And I should clarify that they're not equal. It's not that you can take whichever one you want, and get the same result. Of course not. And I should say that. I just made a note of that. Okay. Okay, just a minute. One can't just arbitrarily choose either form of liberation. and get the same result. Okay? But I'll have to figure out how to say that word.
Yeah,
say
in my logical, I was thinking that if a person reads the definition of liberation in the last statement, then they themselves may question that the commentator is kind of contradicting his own statement. It's not fitting to the definition of liberation. It's not explaining.
Okay. I'll try to fix it. Yes, please.
Not say this liberation of the liberation of truth is one and not one slogan of the institute. If not to define what does it mean, slogan of the institute, what does it mean?
Well, see, that's a general statement. It's a general statement that can be taken either personally or impersonally. To give up a false identity or false identities and realize your real identity, that can be taken personally or impersonally. It's intentionally stated in a general way. So that it can cover both kinds of liberation.
Because the person is, then I say that, okay, you're performing a bathroom, it's your partner, you have to give up your partner. And they also say, in response to them, that you are thinking of yourself to be an enjoyer in this world, so you have to give up this bathroom and understand that you are a Christian servant.
Yes, that's it. But we're not saying that impersonal liberation is bogus. We're acknowledging it's also a kind of liberation, but it's not the whole thing. It's not final.
The only problem is that I think that Srila Prabhupada used to bring this quotation many times in order to support the real liberation, the only devotional liberation. But it looks like that we can interpret this quotation in both ways.
The way it's said, the words it used, can be taken both ways, yes.
Well, maybe it's more proper to, if anybody really wants to ask some daily exam condition, can bring that one from the fifth chapter, which is exactly speaking about emotional feelings.
Yes. Okay, we can do it. All right. Okay, we'll stop for now. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Thank you.